This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Invincible by Sherilyn Kenyon. Read for you by Holder Graham. Chapter 1. They say when you're about to die, you see your entire life flash before your eyes. They lied. The only thing Nick O'Shea could see flashing was Kirian Hunter's vampire fangs. That horrifying sight froze him in place on the elegant mahogany staircase at the front of Kirian's sprawling antebellum mansion. I'm going to die. Again. Yeah, since he'd attempted to go to school about 22 hours ago and found out his principal had been eaten by a zombie, everything and its brother had been after him. Now his friggin' boss was a vampire. It figured. So much for his paycheck. Unless the devil could cash it, Nick would never see a nickel of it. Would this day ever end? Dude, right now, you're the one who's about to end. That thought finally shattered the terrified fog in his head, which had held him immobile. Run, dude, run! He couldn't go downstairs, because that was where Kirian stood. The only place to run was upstairs, after his mother, who'd already gone into the bedroom Kirian lent them for the night. She was completely oblivious of the fact that they were in mortal danger and that their blood was about to be drained. He spun around to warn her. Nick, wait! Wait, my gluteus maximus. Vampire was shy a few quarts of blood if he thought Nick had any intention of not going Casper on him. I'm too young, too smart, and too good-looking to die. Yeah, and then some. The world needed him to improve the gene pool. Not to mention, at 14, he hadn't even had his first date yet. He'd only just this night had his first kiss. He should have recognized that alone as a sign that the apocalypse was coming and that his death was imminent. As Nick neared the top of the stairs, Kirian jumped straight up from the floor 20 feet below and flipped over the shiny railing to land gracefully in front of him and cut off his escape. Kirian's black eyes flashed in the shadows. Dressed in all black, and at over 6 feet in height, Kirian made a deadly, impressive sight, even with his boyish blonde curls. There was no way to get past him. Crapola. Nick skidded to a halt. What should he do now? His mom was in a bedroom a few feet behind Kirian. He'd yell for her, but the last thing he wanted was for Kirian to kill her, too. Maybe if he kept quiet, Kirian would drain only him.
It's not what you think, Nick.
Yeah, right. I think you're a blood-sucking demon vampire who's gonna kill me, that's what I think. Before he could so much as blink, Kirian reached out and grabbed Nick's neck with some kind of Vulcan death grip. He wanted to fight, but he was as helpless as a pup being held by the scruff. With the inhuman strength you'd expect from the undead, Kirian hauled Nick past his mother's temporary bedroom and into his host's upstairs office. As in the rest of the house, the floor-to-ceiling curtains were drawn shut to protect against the dawning sun, something that should have clued Nick in that Kirian was a ghoul from the first moment he stepped into the mansion. The dark wood of the desk blended in seamlessly with the dark green walls. Without breaking stride, Kirian flung Nick into a black leather chair. When he started to bolt, Kirian slammed him back into the chair.
Stop a minute and listen. I know I'm asking the impossible from you, but for once in your life, shut your mouth and open your ears.
I'm not the one talking.
Kirian glared at him.
Don't get smart with me.
You want me stupid?
Nick?
Nick held his hands up. Fine. Just don't eat my mom, okay? She's had a bad enough life without becoming the bride of Dracula.
I don't drink blood.
He arched a brow at that. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. I don't. I'm not a vampire.
This from the one with the long, freaky canines. Then what's with your peculiar dental problem, huh? And don't even try to tell me they're fake Mr. Armani suits and fancy car, because you ain't the type to have false ones. And all that also says you have the money to fix them if you wanted to. Not to mention the fact you don't go out in daylight. And how did you ninja flip up the stairs just now if you're not one of the undead?
I'm gifted.
and I'm gone.
Nick tried to bolt, and again, Kirian body slammed him into the chair hard enough to get his attention.
You know about Acheron, and you accepted it. Why don't you trust me?
Acheron Parthenopaeus was a giant, immortal... something. But even so, he'd been nothing other than nice to Nick and his mom. And most important, he don't got no fangs.
Yes, he does. He's just better at hiding his than I am mine. He's also my boss.
Nick would argue he was full of cow manure, but that explanation actually made sense in a weird way. Ash was more than 11,000 years old and had seemed a peculiar friend for Kirian to have. But if the immortal giant was Kirian's boss, that explained everything. Still, Nick wasn't a fool, and he accepted nothing at face value. For all he knew, Kirian was lying his fangs off. What line of work are you in?
People protection.
Like saving punk kids getting beat to death by people who are supposed to be their friends? That is, me getting shot by Alan and stomped into the ground by Tyree and Mike a couple of weeks ago. That's how the two of them had met, and what had led to his working part-time for Kirian after school. Kirian inclined his head to him.
Exactly.
Nick relaxed a degree as he reminded himself how much he owed Kirian. But for Kirian, he'd be dead right now.
So, you're not going to attack my mother or suck my blood? Good gods, no. I don't need the indigestion. You've caused me enough of a headache for one night. I don't need any more.
Nick sat in Kirian's chair, staring up at him. If Kirian had wanted to kill him, he'd had plenty of opportunities. Instead, he'd protected both Nick and his mother, and allowed them to spend the night in his mansion.
If you want to know the correct term for me, I'm a dark hunter.
Nick digested that word slowly. Which means, what, you hunt darkness?
Yes, Nick. That's exactly what I do. There's just not enough of it.
Now there was some sarcasm you could cut with a knife. Nick wasn't amused by it. So are you going to explain it or not?
We're immortal warriors who sold our souls to the goddess Artemis. For her, we fight and protect humanity from whatever stalks the night, trying to prey on them. For the most part, that means we track and slay daemons.
Which are...
To put it in terms you can relate to, they're vampires who live on human souls. Instead of blood, they take your soul into their body, and once it's there, it starts to wither and die. We have to kill the daemon before the soul is completely used up.
I don't understand. Why take souls?
Kirian shrugged. It's what nourishes them. They have to keep a living soul in them or they die.
That was harsh. For them, and especially for the person they killed to get it. How do they take souls? Nick asked.
No idea. I asked Acheron that question once, and he refused to answer. He's good at that.
So, did he teach that to you, too? Kirian smiled, not the tight-lipped smiles of the past. This was a full-blown one that showed off his fangs.
He did indeed.
I give you an A+, then. Kirian cocked his head, watching him as if waiting for Nick to run again.
Are we good?
Nick considered it. He probably should be terrified and bolting for the door, but Kirian had been there with him, fighting zombies and protecting his friends tonight. He'd opened his house to Nick's mom. He seemed okay.
You can trust him.
For the first time, Nick knew whom that weird, deep voice in his head belonged to. Ambrose, his whacked-out uncle who swore he was here to help him. Strange how everyone kept claiming that, but... Nick? They both jumped at the sound of Nick's mom in the hallway calling his name. Kirian went to the door and opened it.
We're in here, Mrs. Gaucher.
Stepping into the room, she looked around suspiciously, as if she expected to catch them doing something illegal, unethical, or unnatural. Tiny, petite, and beautiful, with bright blue eyes, his mom had always reminded him of an angel, especially when she wasn't wearing makeup, something he hated on her. Her blonde hair was rumpled, and she was dressed in a black T-shirt that went all the way to her knees. It looked like Kirian had lent it to her to sleep in. At 28, she was really young to have a kid his age, but that had never mattered.
It had always been the two of them against a hostile world. Nick, is everything okay?
It's all good, Mom.
She gave Kirian an arch stare that said she didn't believe Nick's answer.
You sure, Boo?
Absolutely. Mr. Hunter was just telling me that I have tomorrow off since I worked so late tonight. Isn't that right, Mr. Hunter? There was an amused gleam in Kirian's eyes as he realized Nick had manipulated the situation to his advantage.
Yes, that's correct.
Couldn't you have told him that outside?
Kirian pressed his lips together in an effort not to smile and expose his teeth.
Nick came in here to get online and play. I was just telling him he needed to go on to bed.
Oh, the rat. Pulling the parental censorship card? That was just rude, unconscionable. If Nick weren't the victim, he'd applaud the quick thinking. But the last thing he needed was for his mom to have yet another reason to ground him. She leveled an angry glare at him.
Nicky?
Nick held his arm up in surrender.
Mom, don't you mom me, boy. I can't believe you'd do this when you know better. Get your butt in bed right now. March!
Rising from his chair, Nick growled low in his throat and cast a warning glare at Kirian. He'd get him. Eventually. Kirian let out an evil, closed-lipped laugh.
I'll show you to your room.
His mom was having none of that as she blocked the doorway.
He can sleep in my room with me.
Kirian released a tired sigh.
I wondered where Nick got his suspicious nature from. You've taught him well.
His mom smoothed the stray piece of blonde hair back from her face and tucked it in behind her left ear.
Yeah, well, I've seen the ugly side of people too many times. No offense to you, Mr. Hunter.
I assure you, I've seen an even uglier side of them than you have. Many times myself. Call me Kirian, please.
That seemed to embarrass her. She gestured to Nick.
Come on, babe, the sun's already up. You need to get some sleep. You're still getting over that gunshot wound.
What she didn't know was that it was healed, courtesy of some powers he didn't want her to know about. If she did, with his luck, she'd report him to the authorities and he'd end up in a lab somewhere as an experiment.
Do I have to go to school? Since it starts in less than 2 hours, no.
It won't be open tomorrow anyway,
Kirian said, drawing their attention back to him.
The police are still investigating it.
His mom frowned.
How do you know?
I talked to one of Nick's teachers.
Which one? Nick was dying to know whom on the faculty to avoid for fear of them ratting him out to his fanged employer.
Miss Pantal.
Great. Just great. She'd never thought much of him anyway. She was one of the lead faculty members who wanted him expelled. There was nothing he could do about that tonight. Nick yawned as his exhaustion caught up with him. His mom tisked.
See how tired you are?
He hated when his mom asked stupid questions. It took all his restraint not to smart off, but he'd already skated past one restriction tonight. No need to court another one. So, minding his tongue, he followed her back to their room. Like Kirian's office, it was huge, bigger than their entire itty-bitty condo, which he loathed. And it had a king-size bed, so his mom wouldn't kick him in her sleep. She spun around in bed like a rotisserie chicken, and he despised any time they had to share sleeping space. But the four-poster bed looked like it could easily hold a family of 10 in it. The neatest part to him was that the blue and gold comforter matched the wallpaper, even the gold foil-looking stuff, which was really cool on the walls. He'd seen that on TV shows. His mom turned to him.
How's your arm doing? You need any more medicine?
Nick had to force himself not to react to her question. He'd already forgotten about that again. Crap, he better remember. Otherwise, everyone would want to know how he healed it so fast.
It's okay. Good. Now hit the sheets.
Nick went to the other side and slid in. The moment he was settled, she pulled him against her and started playing in his short brown hair. He cringed and squirmed, trying to escape her. Unfortunately, she was like quicksand. Once you were dumb enough to get into its reach, it was over.
Ma, what are you doing? Can't I hold you?
He screwed his face up in distaste at the mere thought of it. I don't know why you worry about Mr. Hunter when you're the one who's always sexually harassing me, Mom. God, can't I even go to sleep without you groping me? She popped him on the butt. Not hard enough to hurt, just enough to get his attention.
Stop saying that. Showing my baby affection with a hug is not sexual harassment. You know, there are a lot of moms out there who have no sense of maternal instinct at all.
Those who threw their kids out of the house and into the gutter because of a single mistake, like keeping a baby they didn't want her to. His mom didn't say it, but he knew when she ranted on this topic that it was a tirade against her own parents, who'd abandoned her when she was his age.
Be glad you have a mother who loves you.
He was glad of it. A lot, since she was basically the only person on earth who did. But now that he was a full head taller than her, it was weird when she tried to cuddle him like he was a baby. He could be almost 7 feet tall like Acheron, and she'd probably still try to pull him into her lap.
Sorry, Mom, I'm just really tired. I know, precious.
She leaned over, brushed his hair back from his face, and kissed his cheek.
Good night. Sleep tight. You too.
Without another word, she turned over, then scooted so that she was touching him with her icy cold feet. He would protest that too, but it might hurt her feelings again.
I can't wait until I'm grown and have my own place.
I know you hate it now, Nick, but savor it. I promise you, you'll spend many more years of your life wishing you could see her again than you'll spend wishing she'd leave you alone.
Nick frowned at the intrusiveness of Ambrose in his head. How is it I hear you?
One day I'll teach that power to you. You'll be able to project your thoughts to anyone, just like I can.
Will I be able to read other people's thoughts like you do, too?
Yes, you will.
That was cool. He could definitely get used to knowing what other people were thinking. It sure would make asking a girl out a lot easier if he knew going in that she thought he was not a total loser dork.
When can I learn it?
Ambrose laughed in his head.
Patience, boy. You still haven't learned everything about controlling the dead that you should have, or that you need to. Your buddy caused us to accelerate learning that power, and even though you survived, you really didn't learn much other than how to run from things out to kill you. Before something gets a lucky shot in, I think we should take things a little slower. Learn to crawl, and then I'll teach you to fly. Literally.
Nick's eyes widened at that last bit. I'll be able to fly? Really?
Kid, you have no idea what powers lie within you. What powers I'm going to teach you. But be warned, you are going to have many enemies come at you. Parthenopeus being one of them.
Nick frowned again. Ash?
Yeah, he's not what he seems. And if you have any brains in your head, and I know you do, you'll cut him a wide berth before it's too late.
But he really liked Acheron. Surely someone who was so cool to be with and respectful to someone else's mother couldn't be so bad. Everyone had problems. Because he and his mother had been rudely misjudged by so many, Nick hated doing that to others. He believed in liking, not necessarily trusting, everyone, until they personally gave him a reason not to. Like shooting me when I decide that I don't want to live a life of crime.
He heard the sound of exasperation from his uncle. Go to sleep, kid. Tomorrow will begin a new life that you can't imagine.
With people trying to kill me?
Yes, and that includes your mother.
Chapter 2. Nick came awake to the sensation of his mother strangling him. Dressed in the black t-shirt she'd slept in and jeans, she was on her knees beside him, wringing his neck.
Ma, what are you doing? She tightened her grip. I'm killing you. Do you understand? Dead, dead, dead.
He coughed, trying to twist away from her.
What did I do?
Growling, she released him and moved back, then popped him on the butt.
Because of the stunt you and those moron friends of yours pulled last night, I'm fired. I hope you're happy. I can barely afford to feed and shelter us now. What am I supposed to do without a job at all? I didn't graduate high school, and I have no experience except as a dancer.
She looked like she was about to cry.
You have no idea how awful some of the other clubs treat their people. I know you hated my job, but it was the only thing I could find that paid above minimum wage for someone with no skills or real job experience. I can't even work a cash register, never mind run a computer or do anything else. Peter won't listen to an apology. He said that he doesn't care what happened or how it happened. I'm fired, and to not even come back for my check, he'll mail it to me, because he never wants to see me again. Oh, God, what am I going to do?
Mrs. Gaucher, I hear there are places online where you can sell children for a good price. Nick is still young enough. He should fetch enough to tide you over for a bit.
Nick gaped at Rosa's voice from the other side of the door as she walked past their room. Normally, he loved the sound of her thick accent, but right now... Thanks, Rosa. Appreciate it.
De nada, mijo.
Nick scooted across the bed, trying to get away from his mom before she started choking him again. Kieran said he knew some people who could hire you. She glared at him as if she really could kill him.
That doesn't put you off the hook, mister. Are you and Bubba going to waltz in and trank me again and cause me to lose another job? You know most employers tend to frown on their sons bringing in a brute to carry them out over their shoulders. But it was for your own good. So's the spanking I'm about to give you.
Nick leapt back onto the bed, rolled across it, then ran for the door and into the hallway, where he hoped it would be safer.
I'm too big to spank. Fine, you're grounded until your grandkids are old.
Kind of hard to do. How am I supposed to have grandkids if I'm grounded?
Precisely my point, you demon spawn. You're never going to get off restriction, ever.
The door at the end of the hall opened to show an irritated Kieran. Dressed in a pair of black pajama bottoms and no shirt, he glared at them. His hair was tousled and he had a good shadow on his face. More than that, he had a build Nick would kill for. Dang, no one at school would ever pick on him again if he were ripped like that. Kieran pinned them both with an angry scowl.
People, I really need to sleep. Can you go downstairs to shout at each other, or better yet, outside in the yard?
His mother immediately calmed down.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hunter. We didn't mean to disturb you.
Kieran raked his hands through his blonde hair, which made it stand straight up. Nick would laugh or mock it, but Kieran wasn't as attached to him as his mom was.
No problem. Now, if it'll help stop this fighting and save Nick's life before he can pay me back, put a call in to Sanctuary on Ursuline. Ask for Nicolette Pelletier. She's the owner, and I've already spoken to her about you. She said to call her any time, and they'd be more than happy to add you to payroll.
But...
He held his hand up in an imperious gesture that actually silenced Nick's mom. Wow. To have those evil Jedi tricks. Had Nick done it, his mom really would have spanked him. Hard.
No buts. Give her a call. I assure you, you'll love working for them.
And with that, he vanished back into his pitch-black room and shut the door. Nick let out a relieved breath. He might survive the morning yet.
Oh, don't even!
His mom turned her nasty gorgon face back at him.
You're still not off the hook. Get your butt dressed. You have 5 minutes.
For what?
Don't backtalk me or argue. Not if you ever want to live to see noon. Get in there and shower now.
Fetch, heel, bark, Fido, bark. He really hated when she talked to him like he was nothing but a dog, with no other purpose than to obey her every whim.
You know, I don't ride the short bus, Ma. I can understand you. Apparently you can't, because you now have only 4 minutes and 30 seconds before they start playing your dirge.
With a juvenile desire to stick his tongue out at her, he walked back into the room and into the adjacent bathroom so that he could obey and not stay grounded any longer than was necessary. Though, at this rate, it seemed like she was looking for reasons to ground him. Empty nest syndrome. She was afraid of him leaving home, so she clung to him all the tighter. Okay, that's probably not what it was called, but that's what he was calling it. Sighing, he stripped his clothes off and started the shower. Of course, it took him longer than 5 minutes to finish and dress, and when he opened the door that led back to the bedroom, he found his mother on the bed, glaring furiously at him.
What? I hurried?
Sure you did.
She slid off the bed.
You didn't even shave.
You told me to hurry, so I didn't bother looking for a razor. Besides, I only have 3 hairs. Not like anyone can see them except you.
He kept hoping they'd grow longer and multiply, but so far, they were just enough to be emasculating and annoying. Something else for his mom to nag at him to do. She made an annoyed sound that always reminded him of a tea kettle letting out steam.
Come on, we have to catch a streetcar.
Where are we going?
You heard Mr. Hunter. We need to go to Sanctuary.
He said to call. She rolled her eyes.
something that would also have got him grounded if he'd done it to her. You don't apply for a job that way, Nick.
But go.
He didn't want to go across town for no reason. Why did he have to watch her apply for a job anyway? He'd rather have his eyes gouged out than sit there bored and watching the fluorescent lights flicker.
Can I stay here?
No. We don't take charity, and you know that. Mr. Hunter was nice enough to put us up for the night, but you should never overstay your welcome.
But, Nick, do what I say.
Grinding his teeth, he headed for the stairs. He might as well take the butt out of his vocabulary, since all it seemed to do was act like a nuclear accelerant that caused her temper to explode. No sooner had he reached the bottom than he smelled something delicious. Something that smelled like real, juicy, delectable, make-your-mouth-water-and-arteries-harden bacon. Not those bacon bits packets his mom saved from condiment stands and added to his powdered eggs in the morning. Yum! Without conscious thought, he beelined for the kitchen. His mother grabbed his arm.
Where are you going?
Food, I'm following my nose. And his rumbling stomach. No, she whispered to him.
What part of no charity have you missed?
The part that said he couldn't eat. But he knew better than to argue, especially when she had that look on her face. Fine, he headed for the door. Rosa came around the corner of the wall and frowned at them.
Nick? Mrs. Gaucher? Do you not wish to eat before you leave?
He looked at his mother, hoping she'd change her mind.
Thank you, Rosa, but we have an appointment to keep.
Rosa's frown melted into a kind smile. The same height as his mother, she was a beautiful woman with black hair she kept in a bun and bright brown eyes.
Then let me get it for you to go.
His mother released his arm.
No, thank you. We don't want to put you to any trouble. It's no trouble, Rosa assured her. I made the food for you. I have already eaten, and Mr. Kirian won't be up until much later today. If you no eat, I just throw it away.
Nick gave his mom his best begging stare and pouty lip. It was a look that had gotten him away with many things that didn't have a moral dilemma attached to them. He saw the reluctance in her eyes. She really, really didn't like to take anything from anybody.
People always expect something back when you do. Nothing in life is free, Nick. Don't take, and you won't be beholden.
He knew her litany well.
But he didn't view this as the same thing. You always said we shouldn't waste food, Ma.
She took a deep breath before she relented.
All right. Thank you, Rosa. My pleasure. You want me to? We'll eat at the table. I don't want to put you to any more work.
Nick all but ran to the kitchen, where Rosa had two plates already made and sitting on the center island. The warm smell made his stomach cramp even more.
Oh, my God. We have pancakes and bacon.
It smelled so good, he was already salivating. Rosa laughed at his eagerness. She had no idea how rare a meal like this was for him.
Don't you want syrup?
She asked as he grabbed one of the pancakes up and took a bite. Nick swallowed the delicious-tasting food.
We have syrup, too?
She pointed to the counter behind him, where a huge bottle of Log Cabin waited. Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. He grabbed it, popped the top, and proceeded to drown the plate. His mom was much more sedate as she took her food.
Nick, don't use so much syrup, you won't be able to taste your food.
That was the idea.
Ma, it's real good syrup, and it's not watered down.
Something she did to make it last longer for them whenever they were lucky enough to get some. Her face turned bright red. Rosa patted her on the hand.
It's okay, Mrs. Gaucher. I understand what it's like to have to struggle to feed my son. Miguel and I had many lean years before I come to work for Mr. Kirian. You eat as much as you want. Mr. Kirian's policy is that no one goes hungry in his home. Thank you.
Rosa inclined her head, then moved a plate full of pancakes toward Nick.
But you go a little easy and leave some for your mother. Too many and your stomach will hurt.
Yeah, but so worth the pain. These are delicious. Thank you so much for making them.
She smiled as she handed him a napkin.
I'm glad you enjoy.
I more than enjoy. It's like all the taste buds in my mouth are singing and dancing. I bet if you listen close, you can even hear them.
And it got even better when she handed him a glass of freshly squeezed orange juice.
Oh yeah, he was in heaven. By the time his mom was finished eating, he'd plowed through most of the pancakes. Shaking her head, his mom took him by his uninjured arm and pulled him away from his empty plate.
Come on, Boo, we need to get going.
He licked the syrup off his fingers. His mom screwed her face up in distaste.
Nick, you have a napkin, please use it.
Yeah, but I don't want to waste it, it's good.
She let out a sigh of exasperation as she met Rosa's gaze.
I swear, Rosa, I have taught him better. It just hasn't taken yet, not from lack of effort on my part.
She laughed.
I know. Believe me, my Miguel is the same way.
Ignoring them, Nick took one last bite before he followed his mom out of the house and down the street to the station. They didn't speak much as they made their way from the fancy, high-end garden district where Kirian lived to the other side of the French Quarter, where the bar and restaurant called Sanctuary stood at 688 Ursuline. Something that involved their getting off the streetcar at Jackson Brewery and hoofing it a few blocks over toward the Ursulines convent that had given the street its name. Sanctuary was only one block up the street from it and not that far away from his high school. He'd been by the place more times than he could count. His mother said the crowd in there could be rough, and she didn't want him getting hurt, so he was technically banned from it. And that statement always made him wonder how his mom knew what the crowd was like, since she'd never been inside it. However, he'd never asked her. It fell into the category of, don't ask, because you'll only get a stupid parent answer. If all your friends jumped off a bridge, because I said so, so long as you live under my roof, and so on. Sanctuary aside, Nick had always loved coming to the quarter as an escape from their rundown condo and neighborhood. There was something about it that soothed every Cajun root inside him. The history, the beauty, the mixtures of cultures, smells, food, and people. No place on earth like it. Not that he'd ever been anywhere else except Laurel or Jackson, Mississippi, whenever they'd had to evacuate for hurricanes. And then he'd seen only the parking lots of whatever store or mall where they'd made temporary camp in their rusted-out Yugo. He paused as they came even to the Café du Monde that sat at the edge of the French Market, and the smell of chicory coffee and beignets hit him. It was the first time in his life the sweet smell didn't cramp his stomach with hunger pangs. Today, with his stomach completely full, he appreciated and savored it. Until he realized he was being left behind. Even though he was taller than his mom, he had to hurry to catch up to her. For a little woman, she could seriously haul whenever she wanted to. Luckily, she was so intent on her destination that she didn't even notice he was trailing. She cut down Dumaine to Chartres, and as they went up to the corner of Chartres and Ursuline, she finally slowed down, as if suddenly apprehensive. Not that he blamed her. Almost a city block in size, Sanctuary was not only huge, but legendary as well. Everyone in Orleans knew about the place that was open from 8 a.m. to 3 in the morning. It was said to have some of the best food in the world and some of the meanest patrons. The three-story red brick building had a huge sign that hung over saloon-style doors. It was black, with a motorcycle parked on a hill and silhouetted by a full moon. The word Sanctuary was white with a hazy purple outline. And on the lower right-hand side of the sign, in a much smaller font, was the slogan, Home to the Howlers. But that wasn't what made Nick hesitate. Standing just outside the doors was a huge mountain of a man who leaned against the wall. Even taller than Kirian, he had arms like two tree trunks and long, curly blonde hair that was pulled back into a ponytail. And as he stared at him, Nick saw a flash in his mind of the bouncer turning into a big, angry bear. He was one of the shapeshifters Alex Peltier had told him about last night. Nick had no idea how he knew that, but he did. His mom pulled him across the street to where the werebear was standing. As if he sensed Nick feeling his preternatural powers, the bear narrowed a pair of glacial blue eyes on them. You two lost. His mom swallowed audibly.
Kirian Hunter told me to speak to a Nicolette Peltier. I believe she owns this establishment.
He met Nick's gaze with a curious frown before he pulled a walkie-talkie off his belt and pressed the button.
Amy, is Maman in her office?
Yeah, why?
I have two humans out here who want to see her. Carrion sent them.
His choice of words amused Nick. While his mother would dismiss it as eccentric, he knew better. The guy in front of him was warning the rest of his family that new humans were entering. Nice code. In your face, and at the same time innocuous enough to fly below the radar of most people.
Be nice to them, Remy, and don't bite their heads off. Maman will be right out, the woman on the radio said.
Remy opened the swinging door for them.
If you two want to go on in and wait.
His mother smiled. Thank you.
Nick paused at the door to look back at the bear.
Is Alex around?
Remy narrowed his gaze on him.
How you know Alex?
Could there be any more suspicion or challenge in that tone?
We go to school together.
Ah.
And that was all he said. Okay. Obviously the bear wasn't a morning person, and he had no desire to tell him where to find his classmate. Deciding not to irritate someone who wasn't human and who could probably break his spine in half, Nick went inside and joined his mother, who was standing in front of the first round table that was set with four chairs. Since it was still an hour and a half before lunch, there weren't many occupants in the room. Two men, no, a werepanther and werehawk, stood at the bar, restocking and cleaning. There was one person at a table with a laptop and a cup of coffee, two women eating a late breakfast, and an older man reading the paper and making notes of some kind. His mom handed him a dollar.
Go play a video game while I talk to the owner.
Thinking it was odd, but too grateful for the rarity of having money to waste, Nick went off to the rear of the restaurant, where pool tables and arcade games were placed against the wall. As he neared them, he caught sight of a boy a few years older than him who was cleaning tables. It wasn't the matted blonde dreadlocks that made him pause, so much as it was the small monkey sitting on the boy's shoulder, eating a banana. The monkey bared its teeth at Nick before it made noises at him. The busboy reached up to soothe the monkey, and it settled right down. Nick wanted to go and investigate the primate, but something about the busboy warned him to keep his distance. No, not boy. Were-tigered. A very vicious and antisocial one. How can I tell that by looking at them? Yesterday, he'd been normal. Today, he was a freak fest as images of the shapeshifters around him flashed in his mind. He didn't know their names, but he knew what they were, even though they were masquerading as humans. What is going on? His head was spinning from an overload of information. But with all of that was an overwhelming sense of safety. He didn't feel threatened by the animals around him. It was as if they were guardians of some sort, protectors, not predators. Something that sounded as far-fetched as a restaurant and bar owned by a family of shapeshifters.
Ambrose?
He silently summoned his uncle, needing someone who could help him understand.
What's going on here? I'm seeing some scary things. People who aren't people?
Remember what I told you, kid. You have the power of perspicacity, the ability to see what's hidden.
So, no one will ever be able to lie to me again?
No, that's a different power. Perspicacity allows you to see most preternatural beings who are trying to blend into the human world.
What do you mean, most?
There are some demons who are powerful enough to hide, as well as upper-level gods and those who were possessed. In time, you'll be able to see them too, but that will take a lot of training and discipline.
For now, it was like living in some bad psychedelic hallucination.
Just relax, Nick. Go play a game.
He felt Ambrose leaving him alone again. With nothing better to do, he went over to the Galaga machine. Wow, he hadn't seen one of these in a long time. Some old-timer here must have caught a liking to it. Pulling out his dollar, he converted it to tokens, then put one in and listened to the distinctive music. He'd just started playing when a shadow fell over him. He looked up and froze instantly. Holy mother! This dude had to be over 7 feet tall. An older version of the guy at the door, this one had the most merciless expression Nick had ever seen. I'm going to die.
Who said you could play my machine?
Nick knew it was a man saying it, but he saw Grizzly Peltier in his mind, a huge bear with blood in its eyes.
The man laughed and playfully shoved his arm. Relax, kid. Don't wet my floor. I was just teasing you.
Easier said than done, since his heart was racing like Richard Petty at Daytona. He shook his head.
I'm Papa Bear Peltier. You have a name?
Nick.
Nice meeting you, Nick.
He pulled a token out of his pocket and held it out to him.
Sorry I ruined your game, but I love the look of shock on people's faces the first time they meet me. It's a thing of beauty.
Nick took the token, but still wasn't sure what to think.
He's a good guy, kid. Thank him for the token.
Thanks.
Papa Bear patted him on the shoulder, then walked over toward the stage so that he and another guy who was an exact copy of Remy could run electrical cords on the ground.
Close your mouth, Shook. Papa only bites those who bare their teeth first.
He turned at the soft, lightly accented voice to find what had to be one of the most gorgeous women he'd ever seen. Tall, blonde, and built with the kind of curves men dreamed about, she wore a black sanctuary t-shirt that was tight enough to make him really uncomfortable.
I'm Amy Peltier. You must be Nick.
Man, she had better powers than he did.
How do you know my name?
She leaned in to speak into his ear, as if she were imparting a great secret to him.
Your mother told me in the back room,
she whispered. Oh yeah, duh. He felt epically stupid with that.
Come on, and let me introduce you to the crew that is currently awake and functioning.
Unsure about that, Nick hesitated.
Why?
Was she gonna feed him to the bears or something?
Since your mom will be working here and your school is just down the street, you'll probably be hanging out a lot in the near future.
Oh. Finally relaxing, he allowed her to lead him to the busboy with the monkey.
Ren, say hi to Nick.
The busboy didn't respond, other than to glare out from under his mop of gnarled hair. Amy took it in stride.
Ren doesn't really speak, but he's a nice guy and he lives next door in our house. You'll see him a lot, since he has no personal life or outside interests. He basically works all the time.
She scratched the monkey on its head.
And his furry little friend is Marvin.
Marvin, say hi to Nick. The monkey jumped from Ren's shoulder to Nick's, startling him. Nick grabbed him and held him close, while Marvin mussed his hair and stuck one leathery little finger in his ear.
Ew. He likes to mess with people's hair.
Amy held her hand out, and Marvin allowed her to pull him into her arms and hug him.
Marvin's a little beggar. Keep some snacks handy, and he'll be your new best friend.
She nuzzled his nose before returning him to Ren. Ren didn't say a word as Marvin perched on his shoulder. He merely went back to work, wiping down the tables.
Amy led Nick away. You met Remy when you arrived. My best advice to you on that is to learn which of the quads he is.
Quads? She gestured to the stage, where Papa and the Remy lookalike were working.
I have four brothers who are identical quads.
Quinn, she called. The younger werebear looked up. She smiled and waved him back to work.
That's obviously Quinn. I thought so, but sometimes, rare though it is, I can't tell him from Sharif. They have the exact same haircut, which they occasionally do to mess with us. It's normally a little shorter than Remy's and Dev's. Dev you can spot pretty easy because he's always laughing and cracking sarcastic jokes. Your mom said that that's right up your alley. He also has a double bow and arrow tattoo on his arm, and he's most often the one at the door. He took the day off to run over to Kenner to pick up a motorcycle he had on order.
She drew up short and gave him a sinister look.
If you approach one of them and he growls or doesn't speak, assume it's Remy. He has perpetual PMS and will tear your arm right out of its socket. You don't really have to do anything other than breathe to piss him off.
Word to the wise. He made a mental note of that as she took him to the bar.
The blonde is Jason. Jason, say hi to Nick.
The werehawk inclined his head to him.
The other charming bartender this morning is Justin.
Black hair, tall, and with an aura of, I'll kick your butt so hard you'll be burping my shoe leather. Another one Nick intended to avoid. An older version of Amy came out from the door next to the bar. She paused as she caught sight of him. He felt like he was under a microscope as she eyed him from head to toe.
Finally, she held her hand out. "Good day, Mr. Gaucher. I am Nicolette, but please call me Mama Lo." "Mama Lo."
Her glower melted into a kind expression.
"Welcome to our family. I hear you work for Kiryu."
"I do, until he fires me,"
she laughed.
"No need to give him reason to. Besides, he doesn't fire his people. He kills them."
"Mama,"
Amy said with a laugh.
"The poor boy doesn't know you're kidding.
Nick, what are you doing here?" He turned at the call that came from Alex's sister, Kara, who also went to school with them. Even in height to him, she had the same blonde hair as Amy and Mama Lo. Amy explained his presence before he had a chance.
"His mother will be working for us, Kiki. Why don't you take him to the kitchen? I'm pretty sure Morty's cookies are done."
Cookies? Dang, if they kept this up, he was going to be huge. But it would be worth it.
Nick took a step toward the kitchen, then paused as a cold chill went down his spine.
Something was here, and it was evil.
He searched the room until his gaze found the source of his discomfort. The man stepped through the door behind the women, carrying a silver tray, dressed in a black t-shirt and gray hoodie. At first glance, he appeared like any guy around the age of 20. Until Nick locked gazes with him. It felt like electricity jolted him. There was no denying the intensity of this creature's presence. He was death, and he'd ridden in on a pale horse.
Chapter 3. Okay, death wasn't exactly on a pale horse. He was carrying it. Nick wanted to run for the door, but he couldn't get his feet to obey. It was like every joint in his body was locked by some invisible force.
"Morty," Kara said excitedly. "Your ears must have been burning. I was just going to come and find you."
His gaze never left Nick's.
"Really? No wonder I knew to come out then. Must have heard all of you screaming for cookies of death."
Nick watched as the pale horse, which was no bigger than his hand, reared up on the stack of cookies. Its color was like nothing he'd ever seen before, a strange mixture of blue and white. The color seemed to be a living entity all its own. The miniature horse snorted fire from its nostrils before it ran down Morty's arm and vanished inside the pocket of his hoodie.
WTH.
More than that was the image of Morty dressed in black armor, brandishing a sword. His black hair whipped around his face and shoulders, while his eyes glowed a fierce, vibrant red and his skin glinted like it was bronze and not flesh. Nick glanced around to see if any of the wares had noticed. If they did, they gave no indication.
"Would you like a cookie, kid?"
It took him a second to realize death was speaking to him.
"What?
Do you want a cookie?"
He could have done without the tone that said Death thought he was a moron. When Death offers a cookie or anything else, refuse.
Yeah, that definitely seemed like the wisest course of action. Nick shook his head. "I just ate a lot, and I'm still burping syrup. Thanks, but no thanks." The corner of Death's mouth quirked up in wry amusement. Kara frowned at him.
"You should try them, Nick. They're delicious. No one makes cookies that taste like this."
Probably because arsenic was a key ingredient. He patted his stomach.
"Have to watch my girlish figure, because if I don't, no one will."
Death laughed as he handed the tray to Kara.
"Come on, Nick. Let me show you around."
"I think I'm good."
Completely oblivious of the fact that Nick was highly disturbed by their Stygian cook, Amy grabbed a cookie off the plate.
"That's a good idea. You two have fun. I need to get back to payroll anyway."
"Mama,"
Nick silently whimpered. Morty grabbed his arm and all but hauled him through the swinging door that led to the kitchen, where two giant brutes were cleaning. One was humongously tall and bald, with dark eyes that missed nothing. He had a tattoo at the base of his neck that looked like some kind of angry bird. The other was not much taller than Nick. His brown hair was cut short. Death clapped the tall one on the shoulder.
"Nick, meet my two companions, Pain and Suffering."
Pain was the big one, and Suffering the smaller of the two.
"You'll have to ignore Suffering since he's mute."
"Mute?
You know, you should always suffer in silence."
Nick would laugh, but...
but he was afraid Payne might hit him for it, and since he was Payne, best to leave him be. "Nice meeting you two." He looked around nervously. "Oh, wait, I hear my mom calling. I better go see what she needs." He turned to leave, only to find that his legs were locked again. Death sauntered over to stand in front of him.
"Don't play coy, Cajun. We don't like that."
Yeah, and he didn't like being stuck in the kitchen with ghouls either. Sometimes you just didn't get what you wanted. "What do you want from me?"
"Normally, it'd be your life and your soul."
He sighed heavily.
"Unfortunately, I can't take either right now. Sucks to be me today."
He slapped Nick so hard on the shoulder that it made him stagger back.
"I was sent here to teach you."
"Teach me what? Dying painfully in a back alley somewhere?"
"How to understand augury."
Nick scowled.
"Augu-who?" "Augury,"
Death repeated. "The art of divination." Okay, that made absolutely no sense to him. "But you're Death." Death gave him a droll stare.
"I know, kid. Believe me, it's not something you forget. But there are many agents of Death, messengers, as it were. I am only one. In my opinion, I'm the best one. However, there are plenty more out there able to do the job. Posers, mostly, granted, but enough that Death can sometimes take a holiday."
He winked at him as he mentioned the title of a movie Nick's mom loved to watch. Yeah, Death was a few quarts shy of a gallon. "I take it the Death business doesn't pay too well, so you moonlight as a cook here in this place?"
"You would think that, right?"
Death stepped out of his body. Literally. Where there had been one person, there was suddenly two. Only one of them now had short black hair, a white apron, and tattoos running down both arms. That person ignored them while he went to the oven.
"Where are my cookies?"
He looked around and then scowled as he caught sight of Nick.
"Who are you and what are you doing back here? Only staff is allowed in the kitchen." "Remy!"
Nick opened and closed his mouth like a fish. He pointed at Death.
"He can't see me, kid. He just thinks you're nuts for pointing at nothing."
Great. That was all he needed. One more person who thought he was on drugs. "Morty?" The cook drew up short as he was headed for the door.
"Yeah? I'm Nick. Amy told me to come back here and introduce myself to you. My mom will be working here."
Morty held his hand up in warning.
"Stay right there, don't you move."
He went to the door and pushed it open only enough for his head to vanish while he spoke to the others. Nick could hear his muffled voice, but couldn't understand the words.
Death laughed evilly. "I love making humans think they're losing their minds. Nothing else is quite so satisfying, other than listening to them try to bargain with me for their lives. You know, I was once offered my own private island with a harem of virgins and 3 camels. Tempting, but a ghoul has to do what a ghoul has to do."
The look on his face said he was savoring that memory. Then he hit Nick on his injured shoulder.
"Watch this."
Morty returned with a stern frown on his face.
"How did I get my cookies out there without knowing it?"
Death snickered.
"Look at his face. I love it."
Nick cleared his throat.
"Meth is death, dude. Lay off the crack."
"What?"
Morty looked at him as if he'd forgotten he was there.
Anyway, Amy said you're legit. I still don't remember meeting you. I just don't remember."
"It's all right. We all have..." He slid his gaze to Death, who was still laughing, and had to wonder if he wasn't imagining things too. "Our issues? Tell you what, I think I've met enough new people for the day. I'm gonna go chill for a while. And have my head examined, because obviously I'm having a hallucination probably brought on by finding out my boss is a freak of nature. Now I'm seeing freaks everywhere."
"Good idea."
Morty headed to the stove. Death slung his arm around Nick's shoulders.
"Call me Grim or Master. I prefer Master, but Grim works since it reminds you of who and what I am and what will happen to you if you get under my skin. Capiche?"
"Got it."
"Good. By the way, did you know the word capiche is actually from the Latin word for seize, as in carpe diem, or, in the case of your nocturnal boss, carpe noctum, seize the night?"
Nick wasn't sure what to make of any of this.
"Close your mouth, kid. The cook already thinks you're crazy. Remember, right now, only you have the privilege of my company."
okay. The correct answer should be capisco. I understand. So I say capiche, and you say...
Nick hesitated before he answered, capisco.
Grim patted him on the cheek. Beautiful. You can be taught. Makes my job so much easier when you're actually intelligent. You'd be amazed at the idiots I've come across. As George Carlin so eloquently put it, think of how stupid the average person is, and then realize half of them are stupider than that.
He had a point. I try to keep my stupid to a bare minimum, since my mom's always telling me it can be fatal in large doses.
Oh, she's right. Believe me. I know. For that matter, it can be fatal even in small measures. Remind me sometime to tell you about the woman I claimed who was vacuuming her cat.
Who were you talking to? Nick felt his face go hot at Morty's question. Still in the kitchen, aren't I? Guess I need to keep walking. Oh, look, yonder is the door, which I'm going to make use of right now. He quickly made his exit. The small group he'd left earlier had dispersed. No one was there except the two bartenders who'd gone back to restocking behind the bar. Nick paused beside them. Where's my mom? Before they could answer, she came out of the restroom area dressed in a black Sanctuary t-shirt that matched Amy's. Thankfully, hers was on the large side and kept her completely covered. Her face lit up the moment she saw him. She practically danced her way over to him. Hey, Boo! He started to ask her if he was forgiven for getting her fired, but decided that might not be in his best interests. You look happy. Oh, baby, I am. They're so nice here, all of them. She slid her gaze to the door. Well, Remy's a little distant, but I'll take that any day over some of the people I worked with at the club. They're even going to give me a day schedule so that I can be home with you at night. And best of all, they feed me free while I work, and you too, and not just scraps. We could eat steak if we wanted to.
I'll settle for the cookies.
Yeah, I knew you would. She squeezed his cheek. I'm technically on the clock already. I should have left you at Mr. Hunter's.
I tried to tell you that.
Don't sass me. She let out a sigh. I know you'll be bored here. I mean, they have things to do. She glanced over to the game area. But it's probably best not to press our luck the first day.
I can go hang at Bubba's. It's just down the street. All the joy evaporated off her face.
That is one name I never want to hear again. I swear that man and his antics, he's ridiculous.
It also saved both their lives last night. But for Bubba and his epic fighting and driving skills, they'd be dead today. That thought made him glance past his mother's shoulder to where Grim watched them with a bemused expression. He tapped his watch.
Bubba's all right, Mom. He was trying to help. Yeah, well, for his own personal safety, you better keep him away from me, or you'll have two parents in prison for murder.
As soon as those words were out of her mouth, she slapped her hand over her lips and looked around, frightfully.
Let's not talk about that here, okay?
She whispered. I don't talk about that man's unfortunate and eternal incarceration to anyone. Ever. No offense, but he hated the sperm donor who'd spawned him. Speaking of people he didn't want to talk about, his father was a cold-blooded killer who'd knocked them both around the few weeks he'd been out of jail. If Nick never saw him again, it'd be too soon.
Go stay with Bubba. I'll check in with you later.
All right, do you have my new cell number? That had sounded infinitely better in his head than it did coming out of his mouth, as it invoked an image of him in prison orange, sitting on a bench doing time in Angola, like his dad.
Not with me.
She pulled a pad and pen from her pocket and handed it to him. He jotted his number down and gave it back to her.
If you need me, shout. She kissed him on the cheek. Be safe. Be good.
Always. Nick turned around and headed for the door. Luckily, Grim didn't speak to him again until they were on the street and away from Remy.
Aw, Nicky, that's so sweet. Your mama loves you.
Nick froze instantly. You don't mock my mother. You don't speak of her in anything but the most reverent of tones. I don't care if you are death. I will open a can of cage and whoop ass all over you, boy. Grim arched one brow as his two companions took a step back, as if giving him space to beat Nick into a pulp.
Normally, I'd be handing you the can opener and daring you to go for it. Be glad I owe a debt that precludes me from killing you right now. But don't push it.
While you have a predetermined death, your own free will decisions can override that. Put that in the bank and think about it before you try to make a withdrawal.
Nick inclined his head to him. What do you mean I have a predetermined death?
Did I stutter?
No.
Do I look like Webster's?
Nick frowned. No.
Then you should understand what I said, since I didn't speak in code. Every mortal creature is born with an expiration date. Some immortals, too, set by the big clockmaker. But excessive stupidity and moronic tendencies can shorten it. Pissing me off is one really good way to cut yours down to 3 seconds from now.
The ice in his voice as he spoke went a long way in making Nick back down. Not that he made a habit of that. Far from it. His mom often called him Snapper after the snapping turtle, because any time you sink your teeth into something, you won't let go until lightning strikes you. It was sadly true. However, his survival instinct won out. So what are we doing anyway?
Grim gave him a droll stare. We're going to Bubba's. Isn't that what you told your mom?
Yeah, but I thought...
For the first lesson, I can train you anywhere. Just remember, I won't be seen, you will be.
Nick considered that. Bubba's it is. He was the one person who wouldn't even bat an eyelash that Nick was talking to an imaginary friend. Heck, he'd probably bring one of his own out to play, too. So, who sent you to train me, anyway?
Grim grinned. I'm not at liberty to say.
Then how do I know I can trust you?
You're still breathing, right? If an MOD comes to you and you see them and you live through it, obviously we're here for your good and not your demise.
MOD?
Messenger of Death.
The moment Grim spoke those words, Nick saw an image of him standing with his wings extended, his eyes flashing red, and his face a glowing purple skeleton. You like to freak people out, don't you?
Death grinned. Absolutely. I love the sounds of fear they make. Music to my ears.
And on that note, Nick decided it would be best to continue on. No, he wasn't sure he could trust Grim, but it wasn't worth angering him. So he turned down Royal and made his way to the Triple B, the only computer and gun store in the world, at least that Nick knew about. And that said it all about Bubba, whose logo was him standing over a shot-smoking computer with a gun slung over his shoulder.
1-888-CA-BUBBA. If I can't take care of your computer problems one way, I'll take care of them another.
Yeah, Nick knew all kinds of people.
Triple B?
Grim asked as they approached the sign that hung above the door.
What's that stand for?
Nick scratched the back of his neck. There's some debate on that. Some think it's for Big Bubba Burdett. Others believe it stands for Big Balls and Brains.
What does Bubba say?
He changes it every time someone asks.
Grim smiled. I like him already.
Nick slowed as he saw the damage from the night before. The main window had duct tape over the broken panes. The front door, which had been blasted off its hinges, had been chained in place, and there was soot from the flamethrower all over it.
Yeah, last night had been fun. It was a wonder they weren't all in jail.
Grim crossed his arms over his chest as he surveyed the damage.
Reminds me of the apocalypse. Shame I missed whatever went down here.
It was a zombie invasion, and we barely escaped with our lives.
Grim scoffed. What are you, arthritic? Zombies don't move fast enough to be a threat to anyone. They do, however, make great targets when you're bored.
These weren't undead zombies, at least not all of them. There were a group of mortant demons after me. They found a video game that a friend of mine made that could reprogram the human brain and turn a person into a mindless killing machine. They were using my football team to come after us, and trust me, them boys can move, and move fast. We didn't want to kill them because it wasn't their fault.
Grim screwed his face up as if Nick's words caused him pain. Wimps. Let me give you free advice, kid. Whenever something is coming for you, snap its neck or double tap. Never, ever hesitate. It's infinitely better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
He had a point, but Nick wasn't his father, and he didn't want to take anyone's life, especially not one of his classmates.
He was pariah enough without adding that to his resume. Grimm pulled against the padlocked chain that was holding the unhinged doors across the storefront.
Any way in?
Nick pulled out his phone and dialed Bubba's number. Yellow? Because of Bubba's thick southern drawl, most people thought he was stupid when they first met him. But Bubba was a summa cum laude graduate from MIT and was without a doubt the smartest man Nick had ever met. A little, no, a lot, crazy, but highly intelligent. Hey, Bubba, it's Nick. My mom started a new job at Sanctuary and wanted me to lie low until she gets off work. Since you're the reason she got fired, I was wondering if I could work in the shop today?
Aw, hell yeah, get your Cajun hide around to the back door, pronto.
I'm right outside. Nick scooted around to the rear door that was usually reserved for deliveries. Bubba already had it open as he eyed him.
How you doing?
I'm alive, so no complaints.
Wish Mark thought that way. Boy ain't done nothing but cry like a girl all morning long.
I'm not crying, I'm in pain, you heartless Cro-Mag. At 6'4", with a full black beard and short black hair, Bubba was the epitome of what most people would call a redneck. But the one thing Nick had learned in his short life was that people seldom fit with whatever stereotype others wanted to give them. Case in point, while Bubba loved his truck, his mom, and his guns and flannel shirts, he was also a huge horror movie fan and a sucker for foreign girl movies. In fact, Bubba's favorite show was Oprah, and he watched it faithfully every single day. Woe, or more to the point, death to anyone who came between Bubba and his TV at 4. His music of choice was punk or alternative, but he was never caught with a pair of Doc Martin boots. Just like Bubba, Mark Fingerman wasn't what he seemed either. Yes, he wore a lot of camouflage, but that was to keep the zombies from seeing him. Don't ask. Mark believed in all paranormal creatures, even the Tooth Fairy. Again, don't ask. Mark could try the patience of Gandhi. Only a handful of years older than Nick, Mark was Bubba's sidekick. With shaggy brown hair and bright eyes, Mark stood in the store with a mop and bucket. Currently, he was choking said mop and kicking the bucket so much it sloshed water onto the floor. Nick scowled at them. What's going on? Mark came forward to hand him the mop he so obviously hated. Clean up, my friend. Welcome to the party. I'm so glad you could make it. Groaning, Nick took the mop. He'd argue, but Bubba might shoot him, as he'd done the last 4 computers that had irritated him. The guts of the most recent one were still spread out over Bubba's work table in back. Look, Mark held up his hands for Nick's inspection. They're all pruny and wet. I'll never have my soft hands again. Nick snorted. You're not right, are you? Oh, please, if I were right in the head, do you think I'd be working for Bubba? Especially given what the cheap bastard pays? How hard did you hit your noggin last night? Nick dodged Mark's hand as he tried to touch his hair. Dude, don't do that. He glanced over to Grimm, who rolled his eyes.
I know this clown, Grimm said in an evil tone. He keeps teasing me with these near-death experiences. One day, I'm going to take his butt down even when I'm not supposed to. You can't keep knocking on my door and then slamming it in my face. It's just not right.
Nick, Bubba called, why don't you clean the front of the store while Mark and I pick up back here?
All right. As he left the back room and headed to the store area, he realized how much the two of them had already done. All the debris was picked up and most of the shattered glass. They must have been cleaning for hours. For a full minute, Nick saw the events of last night play through his head. It had been horrible. But the one good thing had been the fact that they'd accidentally found a way to fix the human zombies and return them to normal. The other kind, those had just been gross and nasty to take out. Grimm wandered around looking at the shelves of computers and laptops, as well as peripherals and accessories that were set in the middle of the floor. The walls were lined floor to ceiling with one of the largest gun selections in the southeast. Glass cases separated the guns from anyone who might wander in and pick one up. Bubba's first rule, no one handles a gun in my store without direct supervision. Nick's gaze involuntarily went to the picture of Bubba's mama that hung on the wall, a portrait that had a huge gunshot in it through her head. His stomach slid to his feet. Yeah, that had been a close call.
So, what are you going to teach me? He asked Grim in an effort to avoid thinking about how he'd shot Bubba's mama in the head.
How to open your mind and pay attention. The universe is always speaking to us. Sometimes the signs are in our faces, and other times they're very, very subtle.
Subtle how? Grim pointed to the picture of Bubba's mama.
Let's use that for an example. When you look at that, you see nothing but a hole in a painting. When I look at it, I can tell exactly when and how you're going to die. And I don't mean